This is the Forces Station.
This is BFBS.
Faith in the Forces.
BFBS. Original Forces Programs. Faith in the Forces. With Tim Humphreys.
You know the saying, in social gatherings, don't talk about politics or religion. It's a subject that many of us steer clear of, for fear of an argument or upsetting someone. In this programme, and at the risk of causing debate or even offence, we'll look at religion in the military and ask, does faith matter?
Religious faith gives people direction. It gives people a reason to look forwards and a way of moving forwards.
Faith in the armed forces is an integral part for many people of who they are and what they do.
I'm not particularly religious. I believe in the sort of the moral code, if you like, of the Church of England. And I was brought up as C of E. But as I've grown older, I find myself kind of drifting away from religion.
You cannot rely on religion to solve your problems, but you can rely on religion most times to comfort you while you make the decisions about your problems.
Over the next 30 minutes, we'll hear the views from personnel of all three services. It seems you only have to turn on the TV, radio, or go online, and religious belief is making the headlines. Terrorist insurgent groups, religious fundamentalism, same-sex marriages, and female bishops are all topics discussed not only among clergy and their flock, but seemingly society as a whole.
17 minutes to nine. We do not do God, Alistair Campbell once famously said of Tony Blair, but David Cameron does.
A Christian country, what does that mean? Regardless of how religious they are, most people do not want to see politicians impose religion on the rest of us.
What the Prime Minister really is doing is reflecting a newfound confidence in the church.
We certainly don't want to go down the American path where politicians wear their religion on their sleeve because it's divisive.
Britain's Christian heritage is reflected in our schools, prisons and hospitals, with chaplains often on hand to lead services. Pastoral care is undertaken by church ministers, teaching assistants and volunteers. In commercial companies, provision for employees' religious observance can take the shape of the occasional prayer room, with little or no formal religion carried out as part of the working day. But in the armed forces, church parades, commemorative services, Padre unit visits and counselling sessions all give faith a more corporate face in this particular workplace. Rookie soldiers at the Army Training Centre in Surrey come into contact with Padres on day one. Reverend Roland Olive is a former soldier turned chaplain.
On a Monday morning when they decamp off the train from wherever they are in the world, not just the country, and they come together, we form them into a unit. The Army's great into teams, forming people into a team, and over the next 14 weeks be bonded together as the Army would want them to be, to form a particular group. All that has to offer for us is a great privilege of being able to minister to those various groups throughout their 14 weeks.
Part of the chaplaincy's role is to help instill the qualities required of a British soldier into each recruit, giving them the Army's prescribed moral backbone, and in turn, shaping the service's culture.
These are, at the moment, classroom-based lessons that are accepted by all the major world faiths. They are values based on courage, discipline, respect for others, integrity, loyalty, and selfless commitment. They're the six core values that all soldiers, throughout their training, both here and the rest of their time in the Army, accept and learn from in values-based leadership. So, even though delivered by a Christian minister, they could be delivered by any member of the staff, because they are values that the Army accepts as their core values and are values which the Army stands on in its professionalism throughout the world.
The motivation behind the moral teaching is to turn out soldiers with a solid, values-based approach to their work, both on the battlefield and in their day-to-day admin.
Part of their training is for them to come to church, to explore with us a spirituality, a faith-based part of soldiering. The Army is a professional organisation that takes seriously the physical, the moral and the spiritual. Now, physical, we've got trainers who do that very well. Morally, we teach them in a classroom. And spiritually, we have them explore faith, whatever that may mean for them, to the church, to the unchurched, And for us, it's almost pre-mission. As Christian ministers of faith, we're saying to them, this is the Christian faith. And they, over a number of weeks, explore that with us in church. Likewise, if they came and said, I'm an atheist, and we would talk to them about that, what it is to be an atheist as a soldier. I'm a Muslim, and we would point them in the right directions to the Muslim imam, a Hindu, a Sikh, a Jew, whatever it may be. We would assist them in exploring their faith as soldiers in training.
As those who believe in God, we offer Christian-based morality. So therefore, we're coming at it from a very clear moral standpoint. So we're not saying anything goes or it's situational ethics. We say there is a standard, here's the standard, and here's the way we believe that you should operate within that standard.
That's Reverend Mark Henderson, a chaplain at Purbright. As guardians of moral standards within the army, the chaplaincy's involvement sends the message that religion is of key importance to the conduct of a good soldier. Here's our chaplain. He'll make you a better person, a better soldier. Padres have had a strong relationship with the armed forces for centuries. From the 8th century AD, ministers sailed aboard naval vessels, and later, land-based clergy served during the reign of King Edward I. The current military chaplain's role was established in the First World War. And 100 years later, Padres are part of the fabric of all three services. And in a bid to better reflect a diverse, multi-faith Britain, the Ministry of Defence has been employing leaders from the Muslim, Buddhist, Jewish and Hindu faiths since 2005. In a nation where some of our leaders are proclaiming the UK as post-Christian, the practice of religion within the services can sound at odds with Civvy Street. So, should chaplains play such an important part in our armed forces?
You can't discount the value of having a padre that knows his way around the rank system, wears a uniform, and when he identifies an issue, he can actually put the issue in where it needs to go, anywhere in the rank system.
It's useful to have somebody within your society that performs that role. Unfortunately, the padres, etc., bring with them the baggage of believing in a god, which lots of people these days don't particularly.
I'm not religious, however, I've used and worked very closely with a number of padres in my time in the army, just for general advice, for getting advice outside the chain of command. It's impartial.
When you're away from home more than ever, in an operational environment, overseas exercise, it's important to have something there if you did, you know, require it, because it's outside your direct chain of command. Someone different to talk to is there if you have any issues and you didn't want to talk to your direct boss about it.
From a welfare point of view, I think there's enough organisations out there which provide the support required. Obviously, from a religious point of view, if people are regular churchgoers and they sort of have strong religious beliefs, and obviously the padre does have a role. But from a welfare support to the general service, their role is diminishing, and it is sort of, it's not what it once was. And I think if you were to not have a padre service, they wouldn't really see any different.
According to some research, religion in Britain is on the decline. President of the National Secular Society, Terry Sanderson.
About 45% of people now regard themselves as not religious. And although those figures are not reflected in the army's official census of people's religious beliefs, that's mainly because a lot of assumptions are made about people who don't define their religion. They're just put down as Church of England.
Secularists like Terry argue that the chaplaincy's work could easily be led by non-religious organisations.
The chaplaincy becomes a little bit kind of questionable. You think, why has it got such prominence when it appeals only to actually a very small number of people? I'm not saying that chaplains don't do a great job in supporting and doing these welfare activities that are so important. But, you know, the religious element of their job, I don't think is as valued as they like to think it is.
Humanists perhaps take a more philosophical approach to secularism. For them, there's no divine intervention or instruction, no supernatural guidance or direction. They argue life's ethical and moral problems can be tackled logically, rationally, and with humanity. And although their stance is essentially atheist, their sense of group identity leads some to call for representation within the military. Speaking at the Defence Humanist Network, philosopher and vice president of the British Humanist Association, A.C. Grayling.
On the whole, I think it would be a very good thing if the label humanist was applied in the armed forces. For example, let's have some humanist chaplains and humanist discussion groups. Possibilities, really, for people to get together, to learn from one another and to draw from the resource that humanism offers, which is a very rich one. It's a very deep one because it provides perspectives on life, on questions of principle, on comradeship, which are very valuable.
We actually are motivated by a spirit of service as Christian ministers and priests to show God's love for other people.
That's the Royal Navy's Chaplain of the Fleet, the Venerable Ian Wheatley.
Very often the chaplain is a conduit of care and love for that person, regardless of faith. We're motivated, we're put in that space by not a contract, not a love of money, not necessarily even a stipend, even pay. It's actually a vocation. We're called to be there, and that's the key difference. And I think we put up with a lot more than somebody else might do as a social worker, perhaps.
Carrying officer status, chaplains are figureheads at military parades and commemorations. Day to day, they lead services and ceremonies and provide pastoral care, effectively as parish ministers, although they're tending to a more diverse flock than they'd ordinarily encounter in Civvy Street.
One of the things that we will always say is that we're here for people of any creed and no creed.
The Venerable Air Vice Marshal Ray Pentland is a former Chaplain-in-Chief to the Royal Air Force.
Our starting point is not whether someone coming to speak to us has faith or not. So people might come in and just want to talk about life. You know, they're finding work hard, they're finding relationships hard, their marriage is breaking down or whatever. And it's not all negative stuff, but it can be. And we're happy to do that. And sometimes it's just about sending people on, signposting them to others who might be more specific.
And it's a similar dynamic aboard ship, though somewhat intensified. On a Royal Navy vessel, days from land and with perhaps a relatively small crew, the lines between personal and professional, work time and downtime, may be less clearly defined. Theirs is a floating metal parish.
The chaplain is often an extra pair of hands. Clearly he or she does what she does, but you can do it while you're peeling spuds or while you're holding a spanner for somebody fixing an engine. You can enter into very much the life and the spirit of the community in a way that you can't do in an air station, say, or an army base or a village.
Chaplain-in-Chief to the Royal Navy, the Venerable Ian Wheatley. Chatting through day-to-day stuff over a brew is one thing, but in operational areas, even the most deeply felt of life's everyday problems stand down when your problem every day is survival. Former chaplain to the Household Division, Reverend Kevin Bell.
What keeps people going in a crisis? That's what you're getting into. It is the marrow and the lifeblood of what helps someone to cope when they're under a great deal of pressure. And that's when people are really scraping very deep about what resources they've got inside themselves. And most people on the planet have a religious allegiance to one of the great faiths, is the truth.
I really wanted to go to war. I was a soldier, I was trained to go to war, but when I got there, it was very surreal. You know, and I think it's because you grow up watching war films. And when you're actually in Iraq, and there are tanks on the sand, and there's helicopters in the air, you just look at it and think, am I on a big movie set? And then things happen to, very real things happen, like friends you know or people you know are hurt or killed. It completely concentrates your mind. You know, the air of the drama falls away. It's real then.
Whoever you may hold to as God, when it comes to war, you often hear the phrase, there's no atheists in foxholes. The brutality of battle can strengthen belief in a higher power, but it can also cause some to question the existence of any God. Former Royal Engineer Adnan Sawar was a Muslim soldier in the British Army. Whilst preparing to deploy on ops, a close mate and fellow sapper questioned him on his faith.
He, before we went to the war in Iraq, asked me what that meant to me and did I really believe in it? And nobody had actually asked me that question before. And I think if you ask a lot of people who just say, yeah, you know, and sign up to it and just say, yeah, I'm a Muslim or I'm a Christian or I'm a Jew or whatever, most young boys and girls don't actually know what that means. You know, they've not signed up to something with full thought. So he really made me think about that. And unfortunately, he lost his life in Iraq, which concentrated my thinking.
Sapper Luke Alsop of 33 Engineer Regiment EOD was killed in an ambush by Iraqi forces in March 2003.
After his death, Adnan felt he needed to reconcile his faith with what he'd seen. He turned to his padre.
This guy was brilliant. This was a Christian in the middle of a Muslim country. And funnily enough, he was from Burnley. So I went 4,000 or 5,000 miles away from home, and he's from my hometown. And we had a really, really honest chat about what I felt, and, you know, and he sorted my head out.
His experiences in the British Army led Adnan to turn away not only from Islam, but from all religions. He later left the forces in 2007.
I don't have a problem with Muslims. I don't have a problem with anybody, to be honest, you know. But I just think you should chart your own course. Really think about the things that you sign yourself up to. And it was the army that knocked me into doing that.
For some chaplains, in some circumstances, it's not just about ministerial or pastoral matters. When posted or on tour in societies where religion plays a prominent role, their ability to engage on a personal level brings wider benefits.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Azim Hafiz is an Islamic advisor to the MOD and was their first Muslim chaplain. On ops in Helmand, he found his background and experience as an imam in the UK gave him an in with the Afghan people.
They have no idea that there are Muslims living in the UK and that they are free to practice their faith. So when I tell them I'm an imam from the UK and I'm absolutely free to practice my faith, and actually in some instances I'm protected by the law of the United Kingdom to be able to practice my faith, it actually shatters their view, because a lot of them think the international community, British Armed Forces, aren't religious and they don't care about other religions. So trying to engage with people on both sides and trying to bring them together to build that bridge has been an absolute privilege.
Major Mark Baker of 70 Field Squadron, the Queen's Gurkha Engineers, sees the advantages of appreciating his soldiers' faith.
I've certainly found that having an understanding of Hinduism and Buddhism as an officer commanding a Gurkha squadron was incredibly beneficial, and I was very warmly accepted to attend the religious services both in the UK and overseas, and it certainly allowed me that chance to have that reflection within their society, but also to have that comfort that their needs are being fulfilled as well.
In a bid to better reflect a diverse, multicultural and multi-faith Britain, the Ministry of Defence has been employing leaders from the Muslim, Buddhist, Jewish and Hindu faiths since 2005. Each faith is represented by a civilian chaplain, working in a tri-service capacity. The chaplains support servicemen and women and their families, both at home and overseas. Throughout the recent conflict in Afghanistan, parts of the press have drawn attention to what some see as a moral dilemma, that of British Muslim personnel fighting fellow Muslims. Islamic chaplain to the armed forces Imam Ali Omar argues this is less of a conflict of conscience and more a matter of allegiance.
When they're deploying as members of the British Armed Forces, and therefore it's very clear in their mind that when they're out there, they are there to serve the Queen, and in whatever capacity that they've been asked to do it. So they happily conduct their duties as required of them.
Ideas of peace and pacifism are inextricably linked to many people's understanding of the Buddhist faith, views that seem at odds with service life. Sunil Kariyakarawana is the Buddhist chaplain. He says when it comes to military action, it can be a question of semantics.
They both wear uniform. They both have to have a discipline. They both rely on the camaraderie, you know.
It actually goes beyond what people think, you know, Buddhism is a pacifism, so therefore has nothing to do with military. And I think that is not quite true. Making a clear distinction between use of force and use of violence. Violence is always negative, but use of force can be positive in most cases, and especially in the case of military using force.
In a nation that can sometimes swerve the spiritual, or at least Christian issues, we've seen that faith plays a prominent role for the armed forces. In the British Army, chaplains help reinforce the ethos of service, of loyalty and propriety, all qualities required of a good soldier. When service personnel are deployed on ops, padres travel with them. And in the most testing of times and circumstances, for some, the very presence of a man of the cloth can carry them through. For others, it's within this figurative or even literal foxhole that they become atheists.
I think the challenge for me and for my chaplains and all military chaplains is to have the courage to stand in an arena, in a forum where there isn't much peace, and to try and speak words of peace and personify what our faith groups actually say.
Military chaplains are bearers of the moral compass. They provide both spiritual and welfare support, not only to believers, but at times to recipients who might not normally approach a religious leader. They work across a broader backdrop than their civvy counterparts, ministering to a more diverse flock.
We live, we work alongside our people. We live in the same community every day. So the people I come to work with here are my neighbours. The people that I might go to war with are my neighbours. So I share in every aspect of their life. And so that's all about relationships. So I laugh with them, I cry with them. We live among them. We're there in their best moments and their worst moments.
What secularists argue, however, is that with a wealth of help agencies available, the direction shouldn't come from the clergy.
Religion and society is increasingly coming into conflict over some issues. But over the issues of straightforward worship, there's no problem at all. Churches should be free to make their own rules and regulations for their own members and not try to impose them on the rest of society.
So does faith matter?
Actually, to me, that's what a lot of faith is about. It's about, you know, doing the right thing by the right people and doing to others as you would have done yourself.
I think we as humans search deeper into our souls for faith when we're put into very stressful, demanding situations.
I think having a faith, whatever faith group you're talking to, I think it gives people a framework on which to do their thinking, really. I think it enables people just to get a handle on why they think what they think.
In this programme, we've seen how it has a corporate face and a profile not afforded it in most other workplaces. For servicemen and women themselves, whatever their concept of personal faith may be, it's no barrier to support from religious leaders. In service communities, chaplains are visible figureheads, a listening ear, and a conduit between the pastoral and the signposting of service families to the support bodies they need. What's evident is that faith, in one way or another, is woven into the very fabric of Forces life.
Faith in the Forces was presented by Tim Humphreys. The programme was written and produced by Tim Humphreys and Mario Chrysostomou. BFBS would like to thank the teams at the Army Training Centre, Purbright, Wellington Barracks, the Queen's Gurkha Engineers, Navy Command Headquarters and RAF High Wycombe. Our thanks also to the BBC for material from Radio 4's Today programme.
BFBS, original Forces programmes. On digital radio, FM and satellite TV in the UK.
Online and on air. Around the world.
This is the Forces Station.
BFBS.